Access number 27804, squadron leader Ian Blair, Real 19. Now, tell me again where you were posted to.
Going to tell you that. We were on the strength of number 3 personnel reception centre, which was Bournemouth, from the 25th of the 1141 to 13142.
Now, what did that mean?
Aircrew reception centre.
Did you actually go to Bournemouth?
Oh, yeah, we disembarked and were shipped from Liverpool to Bournemouth and then sent on leave. And that's why I said I had this railway worn all the way from Bournemouth to Glasgow, where they're going to save themselves the trouble originally. But that was fair enough. Now, whilst we're at Bournemouth, all we did was parade regularly every now and again. And it was at Bournemouth that I got my notification calling me forward for Buckingham Palace investiture. And the funny thing about that was that the rules and regulations were you'd turn up in best blue and number one uniform. And having just come back from overseas, my uniform wasn't in a very brilliant state. Well, it was actually, my best blue was, but I'd had it made and it didn't quite conform with the regulations. But I was called forward for this, and the funny incident is the 24th of March 1942, when the investiture took place, and I put in an appearance March, January, February, March. That doesn't seem right, does it? That doesn't seem right. Anyway.
Seems to be when you were at the OTU, doesn't it?
Yeah, it must have been at the OTU then. I've got it down here as that date. But, yeah, that's right. But I had to get kitted out. I had the advance notification. And I remember there were 5 of us, old sweats, inverted commas, who always used to take post in the rear rank and extract the mickey from the corporal PTI who was mustering us all, because we all cut all his respirator. He had his service number fully displayed. And as we said in these days, it was like the population of China, because all our guys were 6 figures. So we used to extract the mickey a bit. And then when they said about clothing parade today, what do you need? And I said, I need a new number one blue and a new set of gloves and a new hat and new greatcoat. And I made a note of all this. And when I went along to get the stores, they said, you don't want a new greatcoat. You haven't been in long enough. I said, you just take a look at the number in that greatcoat. I said, that greatcoat's 7 years old now. Anyway, needless to say, I got my new gear without any aggro. But having said that,
now, this was the number 3. Was it the aircrew reception or
personnel? It might have been pilots. Might have been pilots, for all I know.
More likely, isn't it? Pilot reception.
Well, it was probably a pilots reception centre.
So let's go to your next post, and we'll.
Yeah. So while we're at PRC, you got a form to fill in, choice of postings, and. They don't give you a specific unit, but you write down the type of aeroplanes you wanted to fly. So, being a multi-engine trainer, I said I'd like to fly Bostons and Mosquitoes and things like that. And then lastly, last at the end of the line was the Lancaster. So, my fiancé, inverted commas, lived in Curtin Lindsay in Gainsborough, in Lincolnshire. When I say fiancé, I had known her before I went abroad. I was just renewing acquaintances at this juncture. And at Curtin Lindsay was 53 OTU. So when my posting came out, I was posted to 53 OTU. And I thought, well, that's a good turn up for the book. I'm, you know, just down the road from my wife's girlfriend's.
And that was at Curtin Lindsay.
Curtin Lindsay, near... It's, you know, you happen to spell it, did you say? K-R-T-O-N-L-I-N-D-S. It's 10 or 12 miles north of Scampton. It's just south of Brigg, on the, near Gainsborough. But it's just along the road from, next to Hemswell, 7 miles from Hemswell. So, I got this posting notice, 53 OTU... I thought, well, I'm in for a good time here at OTU, not realising, because when I had visited OTU in the meantime, Curtin Lindsay, there were Bostons there. Bostons, they were what they called the turbine-like Bostons, the Boston aircraft with a great big searchlight on it. I thought that sounded interesting. So, when I got my railway warrant, it said, 53 OTU, Landau, Glamorganshire, South Wales. And I would hardly believe this. I thought they've obviously moved. So off I go down to South Wales. And I remember it was January in 1942. God, terrible winter. Freezing cold. I remember we journeyed down to South Wales by devious means and arrived in the middle of the night and was ushered into a very cold Nissen hut. There were some other guys with us. There was a few UT. Anyway, we freezing cold, I remember that. And so come morning time when they drew the curtains back, all I could see out was a carpet of snow, and sitting on the, which obviously was the edge of the Perry track, was some Spitfires. And I thought, oh, well, there's obviously Spitfires in Boston, so Boston's will be over the other side of the airfield. So we're duly interviewed, mustered to the station commander, who was Wing Commander Ira Jones of World War One fame. I've got a book up there by him. Ira Jones, DSO, MC, the whole treatment. And he entered into his spiel about fighter pilots and this, that, and the other. And then we were allocated to our respective flights. Now, when I arrived at the flights, D-flight I was allocated to, I said to the flight commander, look, by this time I had established that there weren't any Bostons there. So I said to the flight commander, look, I seem to have been sent here under false pretenses because I'm a multi-engine guy. And, this is a Spitfire OTU. He said, his actual words were, I said, well, do you want to go or do you want to stay? Well, as I said time and time again, it was every young boy's ambition to fly a Spitfire. So I said, well, I'd like to stay, I said, but I'll have to have some dual instruction on a single engine aircraft. Oh, he said, that's no problem. So I duly stayed. And I see that on January the 18th, it was the first flight, 1942, was the first flight at 53 OTU, which was some circuits and bumps, circuits and landings in a Master 3. Now, a Master 3 aircraft was a wooden aircraft, and it had a massive, great Pratt & Whitney engine in it, which had about 600 horsepower in it, and a great wide undercarriage like a bus. It was gull-winged and shaped, and when you opened the throttle, it really, really accelerated. So I did about 3 hours.
And that's in the Master?
In the Master, as dual instruction. Bearing in mind that the only single engine experience I had was in my Tiger Moth days, way back where I'd only total 50 hours plus. So eventually I got, I'd done my circuits and bumps, and the guy said, well, that's okay, he'll do, or what's that effect? And he was passing me over to the Spitfire flight. I said, well, in all honesty, I would feel much more confident if I could have some solo. So he said, well, off you go then. He said, so he gave me 55 minutes solo in this Master 3. Now, Landau was a funny shaped airfield. The long runway was 1250 yards.
This is Landau, L-A-N.
Landau, two L's, L-L-A-N-D-O-W, Glamorgan. Sure. It's near Bridgend. This standard airfield was about 1250 yards, was the long runway, slightly uphill from the prevailing wind, and 950 yards the other way. And there was a maintenance unit there which was flying Tudors. In fact, Roy Fedden, the designer of the Abra, was killed at Landau just shortly after, shortly before we got there. But anyway, to cut a long story short, the approach, I always remember, the approach was from the seaward side, from the estuary, estuary, and you came in across, and I always remember, because there was a level crossing at the downwind, and we always used to make a joke, it said, if the level crossing is open, you can land, if it's not open, it's true enough. Anyway, so I got my few hours, 3 hours, I think, and I did my circuits and bumps. And then I had a Spitfire check.
And you 10 minutes. Hang on, your landing was all right. You didn't quite finish that story.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no problems. I had done my circus and bump, and then I had what they called here a Spitfire check. I suppose all
now,
the...
Now, what's a Spitfire check?
All the single-engine pilots got this. I suppose that was... it just says Spitfire check, 10 minutes. So it was only an up, round, and down, you know.
Now, that was your first flight in a Spitfire, wasn't it?
No, and the Spitfire pilot came the next day, actually, on the 10th, the following day. When I can finish this few hours, I think it was about 3 hours. 3 hours dual and an hour solo, and including a Spitfire check. The Spitfire check was really showing you the approach pattern, you know, approach pattern. Where to turn and how to. But then, I had this Spitfire check. And what they did in these days, there was no dual control Spitfires. You were given the handbook, instruction handbook, and you had to. Learn the approach speeds and all the knobs and things, and they'd give you a cockpit check in the hangar, literally, and then thrust and say, right, you're solo tomorrow, which is exactly what happened. I used to have it. So I was told on the 9th I was going to go solo tomorrow. So I got duly allocated an aircraft, and I had an hour and 5 minutes. That was my first solo. Was an hour and 5 minutes.
And what was that first solo? People
first solo in the Spitfire, and you know, it was rather a daunting thing for a young Sprog. The thing that put people off with the Spitfire was its very narrow undercarriage, and bearing in mind I'd just done 3 hours. Dual on this master, which is a wide undercarriage as wide as a bus. I mean, I wasn't all that enthusiastic, to say the least. Apprehensive would probably be the. Anyway, up, round, and down, no trouble at all. This Spitfire aeroplane turned out to be actually a beautiful aircraft. You couldn't really say anything against it. It handled beautifully. It was easy to control, very light on the controls. And you know, with an hour and 5 minutes to play around with it, you know, it was quite adequate, I think, initially.
It must have been a lot faster than anything you were used to. Wasn't it a lot faster than anything you were used to?
Oh, yeah, much faster. I mean, you didn't know what hit you. I mean, that was the whole essence, going from... It was twice as fast as a master. Not only more powerful, I mean, you had 1,200 horsepower as opposed to half that. I mean, these are the things that you know, when you're told to open up gently, it really accelerated. And of course, as soon as the wheels are up, it's away. very homesick. Anyway, that's the way it worked out. And so I rattled through all that after the first solo. And then we started in earnest. We did formation flying.
Now, tell me about formation flying. What are the skills you need for formation flying? And what formations were you learning?
Well, you've got to get used to the station keeping, you know, the throttle movement. And the positioning, and when I say formation, when I look back on it, we were tucked in pretty tight for novices. I mean, we're probably in two spans. That was quite close for us, close enough for me, is with only an hour. Anyway, we did that, and we did individual cross countries navigation practice, more formation flying. Then we did air-to-ground firing.
Now, what was that like?
Yeah, that was quite interesting.
How did it work? What was the target being?
Oh, it was ground targets on the range. What range is it? Yeah. Air-to-air. Where'd I go here? Yeah. We practiced homings again on the radio. We went out and did a cross-country. Across to a place called Cleve, across the channel, just as a flight commander and two Sprogs, and then we did the air-to-air firing. This is on a Spitfire 1, by the way, which is that's all the OTU had. Camera gun exercises.
So it was an early one. It was an early Spitfire.
Oh, 1. Oh yeah, well the OTUs were equipped. Well, don't forget, we're talking about 42. Yeah. Then we were given.
How did you take to the firing of the gun? You know, how accurate was it? Easy to be accurate, or in either air to ground or air to air?
It was. It was first time round. It wasn't all that brilliant, I suppose. But eventually, you get the hang of it. I'm into Mars now with a lot of formation, then a bit of aerobatics. Well, that was just one of these things. I found the aerobatics very difficult, not having done anything other than a tiger moth. It's not quite, although the movements are the same, you cover a lot more sky. A lot more sky, and you're a bit higher up for me. But the aircraft itself could turn very, very, very nimble. But the thing to learn was steep turns, really. That was your defensive manoeuvres, steep turns.
Was that the most important of
them? Well, as far as I was concerned, it was a start. The rest of it came. The rest of it would have to come the hard way. A camera gun, still map reading. So, by the time I got down to by March the 17th. March the 17th. I had mustered a total of 30 hours on a Spitfire, which was twice what they got on the Battle of Britain, but never mind, I was only beginning to feel my way then. I'd done formation flying and fired my guns, and that didn't really worry me, the firing of the guns bit. But,
had you caught up with the others? I mean, because you were coming from a long way behind them.
Well, I was right behind. I always was behind them. I always felt my aerobatic skills were lacking because the single engine guys got a lot of this. I had to learn it the hard way.
So you've effectively missed all your intermediate training.
On a single engine aircraft. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. I mean, apart from the gunnery. And the formation flying I could cope with, because that wasn't just a question of getting used to the aeroplane. And the camera gun exercises were good for the shooting point of view. As I said, I had 30 hours. So come the end of March, I was posted to 501 Squadron at Ibsley on the 26th of March.
Ibsley, that's I-B?
I-B-S-L-E-Y, that's...
Where's that?
Ringwood in Hampshire. Christchurch.
And that's 51 Squadron?
No, 501.
501, sorry.
And that was 501 Ibsley. That was... arrived there. And the first flight I was given, being a the thing is, you're a Sprague. It's just come from OTU. 30 hours that they knew, the flight commander. And the Spitfire was a 5B operational type of aircraft. And it seemed to do, I just was analysing it. I did, when I was at Ibsley from 29th of March until the 25th of April, which was barely a month, I had amassed something in the region of
A lot of hours.
No, I didn't. I only amassed 18 hours. No, that's not right. Yeah. I amassed a total of 38 hours,
right?
And 18 of them were operational.
Now, so you did a lot of training flights, presumably.
Well, that's what I was coming to. Because there was a Sprague on the squadron, right, you got jobs of air testing aeroplanes, going and fetching spares from various places, occasional recce, drogue towing. That was we used to have a drogue fitted to the Spitfire. You laid it out on the ground and you hitched it up by running along the ground and yanking off and pulling up. I was doing all this occasionally aerobatics, just flying around.
So this is all to gain experience, non-operational.
Oh yeah, it was forced on me.
How did the 5B compare to the Mark 1?
Well, it was a bit more powerful, obviously, and it had guns on it, you know, heavy guns. So it just
did that make a difference?
Didn't make much difference, really. It was just getting the. I mean, standby as well. We were allowed to do standby.
Hang on, I'll come to that. What about the squadron? Tell me a bit about 501 squadron. What was it like? What time?
Well, I was only there a month.
So you didn't really
but, I don't remember much about it. The guys were all right, but I was a novice, you see, in amongst a lot of experienced guys. Bunny Kern was the CO. Bunny Kern, DSO, DFC. He's the guy that featured in first of a few film. I don't know if you remember him. And my flight commander was a flight attendant, Eakins. Didn't know them very well. I wasn't there long enough to get to know them, but the point was that as I was going through this drogue, towing this drogue and doing this and that, and going on convoy patrols, things like that, convoy patrols were flying up and down.
Tell us about that. What were they? What were standing in convoy patrols?
Yeah. They counted as operations, but they weren't.
What were they, standing and both standing and convoy patrols? Exactly what were they?
No, it was convoy patrols. These are across the straits of Dover, you know, looking after the. Convoy patrols 7 hours. I did sweeps 9 hours. Another operational flying 15. So. But out of that first 38 hours, I did 18 hours operations. But the point was that how I got onto this thing was that having towed this drogue for the pilots to shoot at, the flight commander said, look, you better have a go at the drogue since you've been towing it and shooting air to ground and all that sort of stuff, air to sea as it was. So I went up on this operational aircraft and I fired at the drogue. And I hit the drogue, you see. I hit it quite successfully, actually. The percentage is probably about 12 or 15%, which was good for a Sprague. So the guy said, and I got back and they counted the holes. They said, right, the next thing is I'm declared operational. So that was that was I was declared operational. So that meant I would fly on the real operation. So my I think the first no service control. I was on the sweep actually, and I went as number two to Widgegleed. He was a famous Battle of France, Battle of Britain pilot, Wing Commander Ian Gleed, I.R. Gleed. And he came, he was the wing, he came along and his, I don't know whether he was, whether he just, well, I suppose the flight commander said, well, you can fly as number two. So a Widge collar hold of me and he said, I know you haven't done it. He said, all you got to do is just stick with me. He said, you'll be all right, stick with me. So that was the drill, just stick with your wing leader. And it was a fighter sweep. I remember right across the other side, and we got across the other side, and all of a sudden there was utter chaos. Well, I couldn't lose Widge. I was stuck on his wingtip, but there was a black cross. He flew across, and up Widge went. Anyway, we fired at this. Nothing happened. We didn't. There was no kills or anything, but the sort of excitement and the aggravation of sticking with a wing leader, not knowing what the heck was happening, and firing at this hostile aircraft, not a hope of hitting it, but firing it did the morale a lot of good. And I nearly got one guy. I was just in the process of going after one guy, and this Polish chap cutting in front of me. I mean, he would have been chopped if I had fired. If I had been quick enough and skillful enough, he would have had it. But it didn't work. Anyway, that was my first.
And what was first, it sounds very confused. Can you give us some ideas?
Oh, it was he didn't know what the heck was going on. I mean, there was no real briefing per se. All it was the wing leader saying, "You stick with me, and you'll be all right, Jack." And we're going across the other side. Simple as that.
And where did the German come from? What did you not
know? Oh, he's just there. I mean, there obviously was some nattering on the RT, which I couldn't understand, not being familiar, and people screaming their heads off. And I suppose some of them were shouting in Polish.
How many of you were then? How many?
There was 12.
12, and there was just...
Well, I don't know how many Germans. I only saw a couple. I mean, I was too busy watching. I mean, it's so frustrating, because the formation in the... The formation in these days, we used to fly in 12 with two weavers at the back. We didn't have this finger four that they talk about now. We had two weavers at the back. And, I mean, I got that job once, weaving.
We'll come back to that. Yeah. But you were number two.
Was wing leader's number two.
And did you manage to stick to Gleed?
Oh, yeah. I stuck with him. I didn't lose him. But it was just... That was just my first...
What was the date of that?
Brief beamer, 70th of April.
And whereabouts? You went over
France? We went across to the Abbeville area. It was the Abbeville boys that were the thorns in our sides in these days.
So it's over Abbeville?
Somewhere in that area, yeah. But we probably hadn't... Yeah, we probably actually were over the ground. I don't know, sure.